Welcome to Declarations of War Podcast. This is episode 47. Thanks for tuning in. Our hosts this time around are Alexei Card, Ninja Turtle.
Yo.
And Leoso Catalan.
Hello, everyone.
Leoso is a newly minted trainer from our academy, but is perhaps better known as the Dust154 correspondent for TheMitanni.com, and also one of their featured streamers. Props to you, sir.
Why, thank you.
Shoutouts. I'd like to give a shout-out to Roque Capel, including our Bartag, who has a relationship with our podcast that's fixed. But he was a total class act the other night. We had a really huge fight with them. Triage carriers got dropped. Supers got dropped at the triage carriers. Oh, it was crazy. I think about 16 billion ISK was destroyed in the fight. And almost all of it was on our side, mixed between us and Unprovoked Aggression. And afterward, Roque Capel were just very very respectful about it. Lots of good fights in local. No one was mad at each other. No one was shit-talking. So lots of props to them, and good luck to Ripard in his bid for election.
Hey, dudes. Turtle here. I want to give a shout-out to Unprovoked Aggression, who's hanging out with us out in Solitude. And I also want to give a shout-out to Delador, and there's a couple other people in Noir that definitely helped me out a lot with some carrier logistics, so thank you guys. That's it.
Hey, this is Leoso. I'd like to give a shout-out for the Pink Fluffy Bounty Hunters, because they just not joined the NMG, and they managed to double their wallet earlier this week by sniping a contract and then totally busting the asses of the PRO guys.
Yeah, the largest corp battle in Dust to date, as I recall, in terms of amount of money on the line.
Yeah, if you convert it to an EVE sort of amount of ISK, it's about 16 bill.
That's a lot. That's a lot for like one FPS match.
Yeah, and if you watch the stream or the recording of it, they beat them pretty handily as well.
Derp. Alright, before we get things going, I'd like to give a shout out to our sponsor, ETH Timecode. Buy 14 ETH time codes, get one free, ethtimecode.com, where your business counts. If you'd like to advertise in Declarations of War, contact Alexei Card through our site or in-game, and we are happy to talk with you about your various options. And, of course, We Love Fine has our absolutely amazing t-shirts. Oh my god, go check them out. The welovefine.com/eve. It's not just Declarations of War shirts. You've also got Voices from the Void in there. You've got Noir in there. You've got a few other corps that are putting their materials up on We Love Fine. It's a really high-quality shirt. Definitely worth the buy. Go check it out. Click our Acquire Loot button at the top of the page. Okay, gonna get into some poll results here. We haven't really had a normal show for a while because we've been doing these CSM 8 1v1s, head-to-head debates with various candidates. And this is our first, like, show in, like, a month and a half. So we're going to go through these polls here. First poll, armor plates after Retribution 1.1. We had a question as to whether or not you would use the newly buffed 800 or the 1600. Overwhelmingly, Turtle, eat it. 83% still prefer the 1600mm plate.
Oldie but goodie.
I'm not going to say I told you so.
I think Honeycombing...
But I did relay something of a very similar nature prior to the event happening.
I think Honeycombing had a lot to do with that too, because you get a Honeycombing 5 and the 1600 plate's pretty light, so... I know I was fucking around with the... combo 1600 and 800 plate setups. It's kind of fun if you got Honeycombing 5, but yeah, 1600 still seems to be more important
king.
To the 25 people that voted for it.
Remember the 5 people that voted for the 800? You've got enough people to start a small cult. but that's about it. You can play Settlers of Catan with the number of people that prefer the 800mm blade. Good job. We also had polls on who won the debates. Now, the CSM is different from a traditional election in that it's not exactly a zero-sum game. This year in particular, because of the new voting system, which we'll talk about later. But, you know, debate's a debate. There's a winner, there's a loser. And we had two debates, the first of which was Chitza Jason versus Cypra, both wormhole mercenary candidates, both former alliance mates of each other, and practically carbon copies of one another as far as I'm concerned. They agreed with each other on just about every question. And apparently, Cypra won by 67%, our audience is saying. I really thought this would be a lot closer.
It was the Metal Gear Solid that did it for me.
That was pretty funny. If you haven't listened to the episode, go listen to the episode. Cypra's ringtones start coming into play in a very big way. Let's just say he's a big Solid Snake fan. And a hopeless nerd. Personally, I thought that Chitza won the debate, but the audience tells me I'm wrong, so
what do they know?
What do they know? We also had, two heavyweights, the only incumbent running, multiple-time elected Trevor Daydu versus the high-sec manipulator mastermind, scammy, campy, can-flippy, every kind of metagame type high-sec thing you could possibly think of doing to somebody. He is the master of it. Psychotic monk. And this one was much, much closer, and it looks like Psychotic had the edge. He's got 56% here, but that is only a margin of 2 votes, so this was a very even debate. What was your take on it, Turtle?
It's kind of like apples to oranges. I mean, I really expected more out of Chitza and Cypra because they are kind of on the same platform, so you'd think they'd want to separate themselves. I mean, Trevor and Monk, it's pretty clear that they're on completely different platforms. So, I mean, they agreed on some stuff, they didn't agree on some stuff, but they were, decent, I guess. I mean, I think it probably goes down more to your playstyle, honestly, than what you think, if they have valid ideas. I mean, even if you think Monk is, well-spoken, nice kind of guy, if you're not down with high-sec griefing, you're probably not going to vote for him, so.
Well, yes, sir, did you get a chance to listen to the debates?
I did.
What was your take?
As to why Psychotic Monk won over Trevor, I think it had something to do with Trevor being kind of the old guard, in this, so to speak, just because elected multiple times. He's got a very inclusive mentality, and some people don't really like that in terms of makes high sec safer. It may not be exactly what he wants, but that's what he's been branded as, and that's kind of, I think, followed him.
I couldn't say who won exactly. I mean, my personal bias comes in there a lot because I'm not really a fan of high-sec griefing either, but I thought that the vision for the new player experience that Psychotic was laying out was, to me, more compelling than sort of the vanilla make-a-safe, super-safety area for them possibility that Trevor was more interested in exploring. Psychotic seemed more willing to expose them to the risk and get them excited about what Eve actually is than try to shield them from it in hopes that they stay longer. And, you know, who's to say which is right until you try it, but, you know, my personal opinion is that Psychotics would probably be the better way to go, at least from getting the right, the right, end quote, kind of players for the game.
I definitely like Psychotics' Darwinism approach to high-sec corps, because I've been in a lot of high-sec, terrible high-sec corps, so.
Yeah, and I've decked and killed off quite a few of these terrible high-sec corps. They are brutally dumb and do not deserve to exist. And I think that there absolutely has to be and should be some mechanic for other stronger corps to overtake and crush them. Now, I want to differentiate that I don't think that the players themselves necessarily need to be crushed and griefed out of the game, but you need to have the ability for player organizations to fail, and then better ones to come up and take their place. Otherwise, you would never have the kind of drama where, say, a band of brothers goes out into 0-0, forms the first alliance, or one of the first alliances, takes them as valuable space. Then this upstart group, Goomswarm, comes in. They get their asses beaten at first, but they keep at it. They get more skill points. All of a sudden, they turn the cultural tables on Band of Brothers, and Band of Brothers gets kicked back to Empire under a different alliance name, where they are brutally picked on by high-sec vultures like us and privateers until they literally can't sustain their organizational identity anymore. And then Goonswarm rises to prominence, and I'm sure someday goons will be back at Empire licking their wounds, and we'll be all over them. It's the way that the game should go. It's healthy, it's fun, and it produces great stories. If every alliance is allowed to become Bob at the same time, because there's no risk of failure, then nothing is special anymore. There's no
totally
exceptionalism.
Agree.
But I don't think it's fair to say that Traber absolutely wants things to be more safe. I would say his perspective is he wants CCP to look into whether or not it'd be beneficial for their business model to do something like that. And I talk with him a lot, obviously, being on the CSM with him. And, you know, I don't know how much of our conversations he would want out there, but I don't think he's as extreme as a lot of people portray him to be. But I don't necessarily agree with his approach. In fact, I don't agree with his approach, which is frequently the subject of our debates. But that kind of debate is, in my opinion, healthy for the CSM, because it makes your arguments for why things should be a certain way much stronger, and can possibly uncover third ways that satisfy the important concerns on both sides. That's happened more than once on other issues, so you never know. Like, a good example is the war deck fees. Having the war deck fees scale faster so that smaller organizations hit the 500 mil cap, that was something that guys like Trevor and Keldum especially really, really wanted. But on the other hand, they didn't really care about the war deck multiplier, which is important for groups like us and Privateers and Marmite Collective, who tend to war deck 3, 4, 5, 6 targets at a time. Since the patch that changed war decks in Inferno, that was costing billions upon billions of ISK, because not only was the war fees more expensive, they still multiplied one another to make the next war deck even more, like exponentially more expensive. So it was like, oh, Jesus Christ. But thanks to some compromise and, you know, after we figured it out internally, going to the devs with a united front, now we have higher war deck scaling. So you reach the 500 cap at like 2,000 instead of 10,000 or whatever it was. But if you war deck 10 alliances, each alliance will cost the same. It's not like the first one is 50 and then the next one is 100 and the next one is 200. The one after that is 400. None of that. So I think it was a win for both sides. That sort of process is extremely helpful. And I think a lot of the people that are shitting on Trevor for being willing to engage in that bait are coming at him from the wrong way. And I appreciated the way that Psychotic came at him. Speaking of contracts and the Marmite Collective, we had a contract against Marmite. This was our first big contract since coming back from Black Legion, and boy, our rust really showed on this one. I'm not going to say that I'm not embarrassed to say it, because I kind of am embarrassed to say it, but yeah, we didn't do well at all. One kill, 6 losses, efficiency was 5.35%. And I will preface that by saying that if we had successfully caught this Legion that we got on the first night, we ping-ponged him on the gate twice. And then the third time he decloaked, he was just out of range of our tackle. and managed to slip out. If we had killed that, we would have been in the positive by far. So we only lost 750, and that legion was worth at least 1.25, if not 1.5 bill. But generally speaking, it was a really tough contract. Marmite was extremely good and well-organized. They had scouts, like 3 jumps around them in every direction at all times. They had been doing the Empire War Deck contracts pretty much the entirety of 2012, whereas we had taken a break from them due to the Deck Shield scandal, and then after moving to Black Legion. You know, we weren't in on the fix to that where it made War Decks more viable. We still weren't doing that. So we were really rusty at Empire combat. It really showed with a lot of the pilots. One pilot in particular, an R Academy guy named Straw Hat, got his ass bounced out of the program for being unbelievably incompetent. Willfully incompetent, I would have to say. He managed to get his logistics ship partner concorded in high sec in the age of you have a safety that you actually have to actively turn off in order to be able to do that. So,
it was
guy was a tard.
Pretty amazing. Like, yeah. What did I tell you? I didn't know what was worse, thinking that you could shoot an alliance mate in high sec, or like, what was it, just having your safety off or something? I didn't know what was worse.
Still makes me cringe a bit.
Yeah. Now, what was the mood like in our academy during this contract? Because this was the first War Deck contract, or War Deck period, I think, offensive War Deck for a lot of students. Is this goes more toward Leoso?
It was, I think as time went on and we, like the Marmite Collective was bringing their A game and we couldn't quite keep up, morale really dropped off. And I think that was the big issue in terms of not being able to bounce back when, after these defeats.
Another issue of not being able to bounce back was the numbers game. When I accepted the contract, Marmite was roughly our size, and we're putting up small fleets, anywhere between 3 to 10. And then in like the intervening 2 days it took to get the post up and then get the war deck started and all that stuff, they almost doubled in size and then brought in 2 mercenary allies to help fight. So we were quite quickly swarmed out, and their biggest fleet was just full of shiny faction battleships, tech 3s, and like 25 to 50% larger than what we could field to compete. It was, I think it definitely caught me by surprise as an FC, and I think once we got behind, and I know Turtle was a victim of this, you sort of get desperate to try to claw back that lost ground, and it causes you to make some mistakes.
Yeah, I got a curse killed. Oh well.
Yeah, for all our listeners out there, burning back to gate to de-aggress, not a good idea when you're across from a Vigilant, which is pretty much a cruiser version of a Vindicator.
In fairness, though, they were dropping like those shiny battleships and everything, so...
Yeah, that's the way it goes sometimes. We hadn't had a contract like that in a long time. It really showed. We're taking some time now to like work on the things that we noticed were problematic, and we should be back in fighting shape before too long. And we were also taking this time to expand our ranks. We're doing some recruiting, and we've made a very interesting pickup, which we'll talk about in Mercenary News.
Nor Academy is now recruiting. We are looking for smart players who are looking to learn small gang PvP in an immersive training environment, in a program designed for new pilots as well as grizzled 00 vets. Learn the ins and outs of merc life, including efficiency and ethics, hostile nullsec survival skills, FCing, and more. As one of EVE's oldest and most respected mercenary outfits, Noor runs a tight ship, but we always strive to have fun doing it. If you want to be part of a high-end merc PvP organization that always strives to be better tomorrow than it is today, Noor is the place for you, and Noor Academy is the place to start. Apply today through our forums at noormercs.com.
Speaking of this week in Mercs, Our mercenary group has now become the first mercenary unit to recruit a significant Dust presence, and we are announcing that we will be taking Dust contracts as soon as Corporate Warfare goes live. Our Dust Corp is the aforementioned Pink Fluffy Bounty Hunters, who are doing an excellent job of keeping themselves in the headlines by winning incredibly huge matches. They are very excited to be wearing the Norm Mercenary Group tags and to really take the fight to people in Dust. They don't really care about conquering districts so much as taking districts away from people over and over and over again. So we are very excited to have them. And part of their recruitment also came a few ETH pilots as well. A handful of veterans, mostly new players. Our academy is working with them now. And who knows what that'll lead to on our EVE side. So, overall, very positive. Pink Fluffy Bounty Hunters is an extremely large corp. And, like I said, they're winning constantly. They're one of the most established Dust Corps you can possibly imagine. And their leadership and members have so far been integrating very well. So, I think this is looking up as of right now. Well, yeah, so have you had much chance to deal with them?
Oh yeah, I talked to them on several occasions, the directors, and that it was actually how I got the lead on the story about the big corp loss. But yeah, these guys are fairly well established and so well that they actually people are scared of fighting them and they have trouble getting fights.
Pandemic Legion Syndrome. Well, pretty soon, Dust players will have a way to force fights with this corporate warfare stuff. I'm really excited for them to get that capability because I know how frustrating it can be to just constantly do random fights and not really have a goal.
Yeah, I'm pretty cool with these dudes. Glad Dust had been one of those things like we had talked about, and we were like, well, it's clearly not, like, a Dust Wing clearly isn't going to come from us specifically. Like, we're going to have to recruit a corp, and it seems to be a pretty smooth transition, so yeah.
Also this week in Mercs, as we mentioned, Cypra and Cheats Adjacent are running for the CSM, and they have both, I think unofficially, but we can say officially by the time this comes out, have qualified for the final ballot. So if you're listening to this podcast, then you're down with wormholes, you're down with mercenaries, and you're down with good corporate and alliance management skills. Cypra and Cheatsa are both very worthy of being on your ballot in whichever order you prefer. I'm going to be putting Cheatsa up top, personally. It's not a diss on Cyp, You know, he's a good dude. I just think that Cheatsa was a little more sure of himself in the debate. And he also represents a non-English language speaking community. But very rarely do these types of candidates have the level of communication skills that Cheatsa does. He can speak and write perfect English. And he's more than willing to write long pieces in perfect English, which is exactly what the CSM needs. So I see it as a good opportunity to reach out to a non-English speaking community without sacrificing the effectiveness of the CSM. So I think it's an opportunity that people should be taking. In EVE news, oh boy, a lot's happened while we were doing the CSM stuff. The biggest news, I would say, is that Ethereal Dawn has been evicted from the Jurn regions by Pandemic Legion, and Solar Fleet's Coalition and Sovereignty holdings have been shrinking considerably under Pandemic Legion's assault. Now, this happened pretty much like a month ago, and I think it's since tapered off in intensity. But for a while there, it looked like Solar was going to fail Cascade. I mean, they were losing gobs of systems, and Ethereal Dawn dropped off, like, overnight. It was like somebody turned off the light switch in the drone regions and all of a sudden this one region was empty, but it didn't have anything to do with, like, an alliance tracking.
Yeah, I think as of late, the Solar Fleet's kind of bouncing back in terms of reclaiming Sov, if Dotland is to be believed.
Do you think this has anything to do with the Pandemic Legion having to assume a leadership role in the HBC with Test? Which I guess is another piece of news we should talk about, and maybe we'll talk about it now to tie into it. But Montolio has resigned from Test, and resigned from Test leadership, and the replacement leader for Test decided that Test is no longer fit to lead the Honey Badger Coalition. And now it's Sort Dragon of Pandemic Legion. So now PL is officially in charge of HBC. Do you think this plays into what's going on in the Drone regions? Like they have to take their attention elsewhere?
Well, I was actually incorrect. They're still losing quite a lot. But I could see it affecting it, but
I think, I mean, even if it doesn't affect their combat effectiveness, surely it has to affect their strategic outlook. Because they just inherited a lot of responsibility. I mean, the whole them deployed to Ethereal Reach, or Ethereum Reach, was like a Pandemic Legion solo move. They didn't really bring the full HBC with them. I don't know that in the future they'd be able to do that sort of thing as a full coalition leader. Or maybe they could, and they'll spin it a certain way, but I think it'd be hard to be like, well, we're going to go in this campaign, but you guys should all stay home.
Yeah, I could see this going from anywhere of, like, Pandemic Legion makes this a whole HBC war, or to this whole Solar campaign just kind of tapers off, and Solar is allowed to live for now.
Well, that's going to be the interesting thing, is like, how well is PL really going to use this new tool? Because PL's got a really specific style that I don't honestly think the HBC really fits in with well all the time. So how well is PL actually going to use this new tool, this new subcap fleet, in theory, to their advantage? And are they really going to take them to war? Because if they can lead them, then, I mean, they have technically a bigger army than Goonswarm does, with as sizable, if not a more sizable cap fleet. So, like, if you could wield this tool, I mean, like, it's an awesome army. But
well, they've shown the ability to do it in the past. I mean, think back to the HBC versus AAA war, where they were standing across from one another in 4-9-U, basically the bridge between Delve and Ketch. And they were extremely effective fighting. I mean, Test sort of derped for a little while, but Pandemic Legion stepped in with a strong hand, gave them a new fleet doctrine to work with, the Navy Apox. And then all of a sudden, the light switch turned on and they started doing well again. I think the issue might come in is that the Coalition in general seems to be losing a lot of cohesion. So the issue might not be whether they can wield them in terms of moving them around on a field, which I think they can do quite well, but whether or not they can maneuver the political waters to get everybody on the same page again, because right now it doesn't seem like they are.
It always seems like there's been something about Test leadership that's been out of sync, and like when I say if they can wield them, I definitely mean like on more of a political arena. Like, I've no doubt in PLFCs, but, you know, I mean, getting 11,000 guys on the same page, that's like quite a task. You know, it's a bigger task than FCing. Like, if they can get on that guy. And I see what you're saying about the AAA war. I think that might have been a little bit more of a deep-seated thing for HBC line members. Like, that aggression, that argument was definitely there. Like, I think you would have a lot harder time selling, like, the Solar War to just line members of the HBC. Because I don't think they really have that, like, direct attachment to the battle.
Well, there's
a good point.
If PL is able to convince Test of joining the Solar War, there'll be a big one-up for getting the rest of the HBC to follow.
Yeah, but the HBC has been having some drama, as we touched on just discussing it now. I think of the match of this was Test's interactions with Fatal Ascension and the whole conflict with the CFC has sort of, you know, Test leadership, particularly Montolio, basically drew a line in the sand as he was preparing for this war with the CFC that never actually came. A kind of, you're either with us or against us. And he made alliances that were sort of friendly to all sides, pick and choose. And this has already resulted in executive outcomes, losing some Sov at first, and now officially resetting the HBC, only keeping Test Blue. And it also resulted in what we're going to talk about next, the Lost in Eve Alliance drama, LI3. They have been just the whipping boy of Reddit, Kagutsuman, all these forum communities that make up the CFC and HBC have all been taking turns at LI3 because they wanted to switch coalitions. They moved from the HBC to the CFC, moved from, I think it was Delve or Quirius, on up to Vale of the Silent to get some better space, and I guess to perhaps get away from some internal problems that were going on with them and the rest of the HBC, I could only assume, because I'm sure this didn't come out of nowhere. But as soon as they left, it was like, oh, troll warfare. I mean, their alliance wallet was stolen, personal attacks and propaganda posts against their alliance leader, Jay Cougar from Lost in Eve podcast. Repeated negative comments on pretty much every news site and forum you could possibly imagine. And for doing not much. I mean, they didn't really directly piss anyone off. They didn't backstab anybody. They didn't have to take like a huge embarrassing loss. There was no public freak out of the leader that maybe caused people to shake faith. It was just they wanted to go up north and be with Goonswarm instead of being down with Test, and that was enough to set this whole thing ablaze. And it feels like ever since that LI3 left, that other alliances have been a little more vocal in their dissatisfaction, I guess I would call it.
Yeah, the cracks are beginning to show.
I don't think it's a permanent state of affairs, but I think it certainly outlines a lot of the issues that Sword Dragon is going to have to work through over the next month or two. I mean, Raiden has been... they've always been sort of a begrudged partner in the HBC because of their ties to Bob. They never really fit in, and I remember at the time they recruited, a lot of people were skeptical about them being included in the HBC. And it seemed like when LI3 left, people were much, much, much more vocal about how hated Raiden was. But not everyone hates Raiden. There's like groups that like them. And there's also other subgroups within the HBC that sort of look out for one another. So will this factionalism be cool? Like they'll have regional defense groups that work together? Or is it going to be the thing that drives people apart as they start viewing their relationships with other people in these groups, like Raiden to other alliances, as more important than their relationship to Test? Or relationship to the coalition in general. And if it goes that second way, that's going to cause some issues because they have a lot of space with a lot of people looking at it. Interesting times ahead. In non-Grand Zero-Zero politics news, the Syndicate Competitive League is about to kick off. This is a player-organized tournament, much in the style of the Alliance tournament, and it will be streamed. Apathetic Brent is a pretty well-known pilot. He's organizing it. And it looks to be pretty interesting. Some of the names that are participating will be familiar if you followed the Alliance tournament. We've got Warlords of the Deep, Deepwater, Test Alliance, please ignore, of course, Scrumptious Ocular Secretion Collectors, which I love, Dread's Rule, the Reputation Cartel, which is the Fail Heap Challenge team, Exodunks, and Insurance Fraud, Inc. This will be sort of the follow-up esports experiment that the community is doing instead of CCP is doing. But it's going to be interesting. Guess who else is involved? Seldarine, Lazarus Telraven, and Bacchanalian. Just like all names that are like blasts from the past. It's pretty cool for me. I'm sure Lioso has no idea who these people are.
Yeah, don't tell Laz he's a blast from the past. I don't think he'll appreciate that. It's cool to see player-run events, though, popping up like this, especially in the PvP domain. It's good. Good that content is getting made.
Yeah, I would have liked to participate, but I found out about it too late, and we were in Black Legion at the time it was getting organized. But, you know, if this really picks up and becomes an annual thing, maybe we throw in our hat for something like that on the next one.
I do think it is just getting a player-run tournament setting rather than just CCP. I mean, obviously CCP is going to have a hand in it just to keep it organized in terms of like getting people in the right systems so outsiders won't interfere, but it's just very empowering to have a player run tournament.
I think it's a big step.
It's empowering, but it's not like a replacement. Like, I don't think you could ever, like, really make the Alliance tournament, for example, player run. I mean, there's always going to have to be that one thing that CCP does, you know, with really awesome prizes and, you know, that they stream. Like, they always got to have their tournament. But to see the players be able to exist in an environment where they can do their own events and this kind of shit, it's good to see that people actually want to do this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't think anything is going to replace the Alliance tournament, and I really hope that CCP puts out information about the next one soon. It's just such a community-wide event that everyone sees as legitimate and important, and CCP backs that up with, like, unique prizes and massive media coverage. It just brings an excitement that's so important to have in EVE, a sort of server-wide buzz. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's theory crafting about it. Everybody's got the teams that they're rooting for. And I just don't see any way that a player-run event could reach that level of exposure and legitimacy, no matter how good it is. Just to say that people shouldn't do them. I think they should. I just think that both can and should and need to coexist. Okay, and the other big piece of news was the Battle of New Kaldari, which was a massive live event. Again, things CCP can do that players just can't replicate. There was a enormous fight with the live events team playing Galenti and Kaldari capital ship pilots above the planet of New Kaldari in the system of Luminaire, where the Galenti fleets were trying to destroy the Kaldari Titan that is orbiting the planet for, like, well, ever since I started playing, for sure. And it was epic. They streamed it, players came in and they took suspect flags for shooting the ships, so players were shooting players were shooting ships. And while all this craziness was going on up in space, down on the planet itself, the Dust Mercs were having their own fight between the Galenti and the Kaldari factions of FPS players. And this was all going on real time, the whole thing. And eventually, after a pretty bloody and spectacular fight, the Kaldari Titan was destroyed and it crashed onto the planet and is now a playable map in Dust. Holy crap. In terms of exposure for CCP, this was an unqualified success. They got tons of people that never heard of EVE tuned in, watching this, and being really impressed that Dust and EVE were working so well together, how well EVE looked. I was watching the chat on the live stream. A lot of people were asking how they can play and where the subscription links were. So I think that's definitely a good sign. As some people have pointed out, including Poetic Stanzil, the actual execution of the event was far from perfect, which you pretty much can say about every live event because they're live. But I think CCP will take away some important lessons from this, and I think having participated in the start of it, realizing my ship was pretty ill-suited for the task, leaving and coming back and getting stuck in a gate for the rest of the event and having to watch it on TV, I think it was a pretty unqualified success. I think it was just great, and I really hope that they do more epic stuff like this more frequently.
That would be great, just especially using the Dust EVE link. Like, I know with a lot of the Dust players enjoyed it, because I played on the ground a little bit during the event on Dust, and there were several occasions when I killed people that were just staring up at this new skybox with the Crash Titan.
I think at some point now, though, CSB kind of has to make it so you can, like, go inside the Titan wreck and have Dust fights there.
Oh, that would be epic.
Right now, you can only, like, play with it in the distance, I think. But
yeah. Recover the lost technology of the Titan to give an edge to the Galente or Kaldari.
Oh, that'd be so cool. Plus, I don't think they have any... All the Dust maps that I've seen so far have been, like, high-ceiling, multi-level kind of things where you can shoot down. They don't really have, like, a corridor shooter kind of map. I think that would be a really interesting opportunity to do one. Now, obviously, they would do it far in the future. It would be a very anticipated expansion. But I think it's a natural one.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It'd be, like, the sort of expansion where you could then send Dust Mercs to take over stations and Posses and maybe Titans if you could get them in there. But that's, like, way future.
Well, we'll see where it goes. Do you think future live events will feature a Dust Eve component, or we still have some Eve-only ones?
It'll probably be a bit of both, but especially with Dust beginning to kick into high gear in terms of the link, I'm sure they're going to exploit the link more often.
Moving on to CSM election coverage. It is election time! It is officially on. The pre-election is now live. It will probably be over by the time this is announced. But if you are hearing this right now, go vote. Go vote. This election, more important than probably any other election prior, the turnout is going to make all the difference. Your vote now carries more weight and power, and the CSM is a more effective institution than it has ever been in its entire history. And if you want to make a difference, now's the time to do it. You don't have to, like, worry about picking one candidate that you're sure he's going to win. That's not a problem anymore. You can vote for a Joe Blow candidate, and if he doesn't get in, don't worry about it. As long as you have a second preference in there, that'll get honored. So give your vote to the person that you believe in. Fill your ballot up with people that are, you know, not quite as good, but you'll take them. And these people will get on the CSM. You will be represented. And the CSM, thanks to the electoral and structural changes that CSM 7 has stewarded in conjunction with CCP Exhagen, and, like, all the relationships and work that we put into building up the CSM and building up our participation and expansions and our stakeholdership, CSM 8 is going to wield unfathomable amounts of power. Like, if you told CSM 5 that they'd be able to do what CSM 8 is going to be able to do, they would have laughed in your face. I certainly wouldn't have believed it after having spent 3 months, 2 months even, on CSM 4, which was one of the most frustrating experiences of my whole life. Yet, we are here. And now it's time for the players to go take advantage of that. So, part of one of the changes that were made was the new election system. It's going to be single transferable vote, which means you can rank 1 to 14 candidates in order of your preference. If you just want to vote for one dude like you did before, there's nothing stopping you. But it's a good idea to vote for more than one person, especially if there's more than one person you would be happy to see on. Like, for instance, I'd be happy to see Cheetza and Psychotic Monk and Trevor all on the CSM. I don't have to pick and choose. I can say, well, maybe I want this person first, but if that person makes it or doesn't make it, my vote will get passed on. My vote's not wasted. And neither will your vote be wasted if you do this. So, it'll be pretty awesome. There's not going to be any more rankings. Like, you're not going to have the 00 guys put 10,000 votes into one candidate and automatically get them the chairmanship. There's just in or not in. There's no more alternates. There's nothing like that. You either have enough votes to get across the threshold, which is the number of votes divided by 14, pretty much, or you don't. And if you do, then you're on. And once the CSM is elected, they will pick their own chairman. We did that this year. It was, I felt, a pretty smart move to do. And now it will be common CSM practice to elect their own chairman, which will allow CSMs to put the person best equipped for that job and the one with the most support for that job within the body in the right position and give them the proper tools, rather than have it be all about 00 block voting, which is extremely important. If you're a Dust player, get involved. I would say this election is for you too. I know you have your own war council, but, you know, Eve is still going to be a role in your life. You're still going to be putting lasers and shells and hybrid turret blasts down from space onto your ass. So you might want to be involved in that. Turtle or Leo, so what are your thoughts going into this election?
Voting is stupid. No, I'm pumped. Single transferable vote was something like I could see we needed for years after the CSM came out, and it's good to see them finally do it. I know that CCP like definitely had some social pressure in terms of the players to do it, and I mean something needed to be done, but at the correct time, and I think they found the correct time to do it and managed to make an effective reform. So it's too bad politics doesn't work like that in real life.
Well, it doesn't work that way on Eve either. The new voting system has been pretty widely panned from the two usually very divergent groups. On one hand, it's being panned by the Empire tinfoil hat Care Bear guys. And on the other hand, it's being panned from the 00 guys. The 00 guys are like, oh, it's going to be too easy for us to stack the vote. And then the Empire guys are like, well, now the vote's even more meaningless than it was before. You just sold out the CSM to CCP, which is a weird concept because we work together, you know. But in particular, one troll on Jita Park fervently believes that because now that the CSM actually selects in conjunction with CCP Xhagen, which delegates will be able to sit at the conference table in Iceland based on their relevance and based on the amount of work they've been putting in, that this somehow is brown-nosing to CCP. I will also point out, with no degree of irony, the same troll complained for months and months and months on end about the do-nothing CSMs and how they don't work, and how there needs to be some sort of incentive for them to work or have their privileges revoked and all this stuff. And, of course, in true troll fashion, as soon as something like that happens, now it's the other side. And on the 00 side of things, you've got characters like the Mitanni and a few other higher-ups in the 00 hierarchy are saying, oh, Empire guys, don't even bother to vote, because we're going to have so many votes that we're just going to drown you out anyway. Like, this election is perfectly done for us because all our votes are going to count to all our candidates. What they're not telling you is that except for last year, where they decided to put all of their votes into one candidate, being the Mitanni, they've been doing that every CSM election ever.
Well,
and
yeah,
they do it really well because they have access to information and infrastructure which lets them allocate their votes near perfectly to make sure they get the maximum candidates. All STV does, this new election system, is gives every candidate that ability, no matter whether they're connected with Goonswarm's massive IT infrastructure or whether they're Mike Azariah, who's a RP blogger. Now it's a level playing field. That's
well,
all that is.
That's the thing. It's a level playing field because they have been doing that forever. And everybody in Empire is whining about it, but it's like they don't get the reality of it. It's like this is going to happen either way. Like, you should at least hop on the bandwagon and do this too.
If anything, I think it's a boost for those candidates down below, because I mean, yeah, you can make the argument that the 0-0 guys are going to get the maximum amount of seats they can possibly get. But if they are the maximum number of voters, like if they're 2/3 the vote, they should get 2/3 the seats. That just makes sense. What I think is really nice for the non-0-0 guys is that now candidates that are, I want to say smaller time to disparage them, but perhaps less well-known, but still very credible. Again, I'll use Mike, or even Psychotic Monk to people that don't do Empire griefing. They might not know those names, but if they see them on debates or they pick up their blog posts and they like them, you know, maybe they get put onto certain ballots. Maybe not as the number one spot, maybe as the number one spot, and then the votes get rolled down from people that get knocked out or get elected, and their overvotes get passed on down. And eventually they all of a sudden have a shot where they wouldn't have had a shot.
Yeah, I think that's the really good thing about this transferable vote, is it'll allow these smaller time guys to get elected. And like a lot of the NullSec block voting guys, like Kesper North and a lot of the HPC, CFC guys, aren't opposed to having these high sec guys that aren't quite as well known on their ballots recommended to the their membership. They just need to approach them, really.
Well, it seems to be a split on that one. There's some excellent coverage going on. Crossing Zebras is probably the most authoritative place to go to get CSM coverage. Xander Fina has done a one-on-one interview with almost every candidate running. A 30-minute interview. No softball questions. I mean, he really goes into it. Challenges their posts, challenges their claims, challenges their platforms. It's really good stuff. But there's also Voices from the Void, which is doing a series of four-man debates. And one debate they had was Malkanis, Kesper North, Sort Dragon, and Mike Azariah, the blogger. And I feel like there was some territory branch there. I mean, Sort Dragon made talk of that they're going to stuff the ballot and they're going to lock out every non-0-0 candidate and all this stuff. And then I think it was Malkanis or Kesper, I can't quite remember, but they challenged them on that and said that wouldn't be a smart move. And then turned the tables onto Mike and was like, well, Mike, you seem like a very articulate and, you know, intelligent candidate that really works hard and cares about this. Why haven't you approached us about being onto this ballot? And Mike was like gobsmacked, like he hadn't even considered the possibility. And then for like the next 5-10 minutes, they talked about being able to work together. And I don't know if that's actually going to translate into Mike appearing on these 0-0 recommended voting lists, but I think it was a really incredible moment that shows that politics doesn't always have to be about what area of space you're from.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a bleed over from real life politics of a zero sum game. I mean, with CSM, there's 14 people that can win, so there's a lot more margin for working together and trying to just kind of kumbaya it a little bit.
And I think there's a serious disadvantage to having an all 0-0 CSM. I mean, this was CSM6's composition. They had no Empire War candidate, for instance. And they suffered for it. I mean, they did very few missteps, but the major ones that they did do were because they didn't realize certain changes CCP was doing to Empire were going to be such a big deal. That's part of the reason why the war deck system was such a mess for the entirety of 2012. And it caused a lot of problems for a lot of people, but those people weren't represented on the council, so the CSM didn't know to care about it, pretty much. Now, a lot of this is, you could say it's the voters' fault for not turning out for that election. And there's an argument to be made for that, But on the other end, it was CSM6 was so motivated to get on that their turnout, like, just vastly exceeded anything that it historically had been. This time around, it was a bit more balanced because Goonswarm put all their votes behind one candidate, which opened up spots for more people. But you still had, like, Test was on there, Pandemic Legion had two people, AAA had a person, X-Death had a person. All these 00 groups were totally represented.
X-Death is a person.
Yes. X-Death sent X-Death. Now it's, I mean, who's to say? The Goonswarm guys can't really choose to put all their votes behind one person like they had before. But I don't even think they would have done that if the opportunity had arisen, simply because Mitanni wound up getting banned. And then the "your votes don't count" meme got started, because 10,000 votes were essentially thrown out. I don't think they would want to repeat that by only running one dude. So I think they were going to run two people no matter what. And now it's just a question of how many other guys are going to get on. And that really depends not on any sort of electoral trickery, but literally how many people turn out. Like, if Goonswarm is, for whatever reason, 25% of the vote, they should get 25% of the seats, because they're voting. That's why it's important that you guys go out and vote, to raise that threshold for the 00 guys as much as possible to get a balanced CSM. But I can assure you this, the CSM voting procedures will make sure that this CSM is representative of the will of the voters more accurately than ever before, and in a fair an even way. Now it's a question of which of those voters are going to make their will known. And if it's only the 00 people turning out for it, then that's going to show. But I have a suspicion that it will not be. Now, with any election, there's also some good drama to be had. So, let's get into it. And this will close out the podcast on a somewhat lighter note. There's a racist running for the CSM, and I can't fucking believe it, but he has passed the qualification bar of 200 votes. Fawn Revithort, and we're going to link the interview in the show notes, is an... I don't want to say loud and proud, because he does seem somewhat reluctant, but he is an openly white supremacist racial nationalist, which means he thinks there are races of people, the races are different from one another, some are better than others, whites are the best, every race should have its own country and not mix with the other races, and if you do go to another race's country, you no longer have the rights to be treated as a human being. In other words, there's no human rights, there's only race rights, depending which country you're in. And I am not shitting you. This is a real dude really saying this stuff in public into a microphone. And nearly as shocking, but for entirely different reasons, Travis Muskrat. He is a Northern Coalition dot candidate who gave such a terrible interview that, at least allegedly, Mina from Goonswarm wants him off and probably will get him off the 00 recommended list. Which maybe that's the spot that Mike Hezariah is going to take, I don't know. But yeah, the phrases "that sounds like work," "I don't represent the community, I only represent my alliance," "I don't really feel like campaigning, but if I was elected, I'd probably care." And yeah, it just kept going on like that, and my mouth just kept dropping further and further and further. This dude was so full of himself. He thought that he didn't need... And man, I don't know, maybe he's going to be right, who knows, but I somehow doubt it. I don't really think he's going to win people over with his charming personality. But he seemed to think that his alliance, plus all the alliances that he has an alt in and has been talking to the CEOs about, would be enough to get him on the CSM. And as such, he didn't need to even pretend to give a fuck about anything, even his own self-respect. So, best of luck to Travis, and I think he's going to need it. And the other piece of drama is CCP Dolan, a Test Alliance dude, did a very testy thing and sent out qualification mails, in other words, that people had made the 200 vote cutoff to be on the final ballot. He sent them to everyone, even people that didn't make it yet. So I think at least three people got false positive mails where they were informed that they had passed the 200 vote threshold, but in fact had not. Of those, I'm pretty sure just two are not going to be on. And I'm not sure if that includes Januria, who was barred from participating in the election because he claimed to associate with a group that had participated in DDoS attacks on CCP in the past, and CCP Sarig did not appreciate it. So, one of these guys that was affected by the false positives, and at least as far as we know, has not hit his qualification yet, is another one where my mouth kind of dropped a little bit, not nearly as much as Travis's and Fawn's, but still. Sigurd Battersea, who started playing 18 months ago, and knows practically nothing about the game. But he is running for the CSM. He's sort of the poster child for the newbies, I guess, is what he was going for, and I know Poetic Stanzel really likes him for that reason. However, he did not know what Technetium was. He couldn't articulate anything about SOV mechanics, not what they should be, which is fine if he doesn't know that much about them. He didn't even know what they really were. He doesn't know what the CSM actually stood for, the initials. Couldn't name anyone that's ever been on the CSM except for Vile Rat, because of Vile Rat's the publicity over his death. He couldn't name, say, the Mitanni, however. As much as I like this guy, and I really do wish him the best in an EVE career, because he does seem like a cool dude, but probably not the best person to be putting on, like, the CSM, where you're supposed to be able to participate intelligently about nearly every aspect of EVE, from mining to account verification and marketing and Alliance tournament rule checking and all this other stuff that we have to do. So, yeah, and allegedly he got into a email fight with CCP Dolan over the false positive thing and may or may not be withdrawing his candidacy because he feels that the process is somehow corrupt. So, GG on that one.
I love it when, like, people start screaming about corruption in an election that has, like, absolutely no financial bearing for anyone. No one gives a fucking shit. Like, people make the most insane connections, like, between NullSec Blocks and Goonswarm and CCP, and it's like,
I didn't know what Technetium was, and now I'm being silenced for my views.
Some of the shit you'll see if you have an alt in a noob corp is just like, or an NPC corp, excuse me, is just insane. I mean, some of the connections people try to make.
Not enough tinfoil in the world.
Oh, dude, that's nothing. Do you remember back when the War Deck revamp was first going through and the ally system was a clusterfuck? And people thought that I and all Empire mercenaries, literally all Empire mercenaries, were a goon swarm front to support and draw sympathy for updates to the War Deck system, so that Goonswarm would not be trapped by Jade Constantine's alliance in like an endless infinite allies war. And Mitanni planned this out like 5 years in advance yep. to make sure that there was a thriving Empire Merc industry that he could use any time that Jade Constantine's alliance just happened to be at war with him.
Yet we somehow got stuck in one of the same endless war decks.
Oh god, that whole war deck thing is a fucking mess.
Yeah, I mean, silliness.
Mittens is an evil genius, but I don't think he's that much of an evil genius.
Ah, it's worse than the plot holes in the fucking Star Wars prequels. Anyway, guys, check out the interviews that we're linking for you here. Check out the Voices from the Void interviews. If you see a candidate that you like, definitely recommend you check out their Crossing Zebras interview. Most importantly, I mean, go out and vote, yes. But not just that. Tell your corp to vote. Tell your friends to vote. Voter turnout is essential. The council will accurately represent the proportion of voters that turn out. So if you are a faction warfare dude and you want stuff for LoSec, and, you know, there's no one that really running for you, well, you better find a candidate that, you know, knows your stuff. Otherwise, who's going to speak up for you when changes come around? Likewise for wormholers. And wormholers, guys, you've got 5 relatively solid candidates out there. Get out and put your votes behind them. But don't stop at 5. Start looking for some other, like, Rippard Tags or Trevor Daydews, other heavy-hitting, qualified CSM members you can put your vote behind. If you have the time to add a few more names to that list, man, do it. But I cannot emphasize enough, go out and vote. Tell other people about the election. Tell them what it means. Link them the pages. Even if you're just getting them to vote for the people that you want to get in, that's fine. Get them to vote. So important. That's it for Declarations of War 47, guys. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll. Leave a comment or put in a donation. This podcast is listener supported. And the donations, recurring donations, and sponsorships help pay for hosting, editing, and cool contests and such. Like, hell, we gave away, 3 or 4 shirts at the Wisconsin Eve Gathering?
Yeah. Yeah, it was an interesting little meetup in Milwaukee. Met a few people, a couple of guys in the podcast community. It was all right. Glad I brought some friends, but, you know.
We'd love to do more stuff like that, so... You know, help us help you, help us help you.
To be fair, I didn't set that one up, though. Like, I can throw a party, so if I ever do a live event, it will be something to remember.
You should do a live event, man. Come on, hookers and blow. Make it happen.
Blackout at a live event. It's tough, man.
5 o'clock free crack giveaway, sponsored by Declarations of War. You can reach Noir via our public channel, Cafe Nordot, and apply to join us or Noir Academy on our forums, www.noirmarks.com, and I'll even throw this in there, at least for the next month or so, if not the next 2 months. Noir is looking for member corps, so if your corp is interested in getting into mercenary combat, and you want a really established alliance with a well-developed and stable leadership structure, and cool benefits, and cool pilots... Come my way. Convo Alexeyev card or drop me an email and I will get back to you. That's it, guys. Signing out.
Is this this leadership structure you speak of?
I am the master of the clip. Remember this fucking thing. I am the master of the clip. Let this little fuck, none of you little fucks out there. I am the master for the clip. I am the master for the clip. I am the master for the clip. I am the clip commander. When it comes down to business, I am the commander. When it comes down to business, I'm like this. Oh, you little fuck. When it comes down to
people be like, there he goes. Homeboy fucked a Martian once. People be like, there he goes. Homeboy fucked a seal once.
I am the master for the clip. I am the master for the clip. I am the master for the clip. If you see clip, you'll see this fucking face.
Holy shit. Our first customer since I'm trying to return, I'm cool. You guys hold it? Shit, everything but coke heroin in your cock.
Motherfucking huge.
And the clit commander.
I'm a pwn, I didn't even know it, Sound Bob.